Good evening, everyone. And
good evening.
Wednesday night it is, and it's 7 o'clock, and that means it's time for the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold, and we're going to take a. We've been taking a tour of it, and we're on. What is this? The 36th week or 30? 36 or 37? Dan, can you get over to? Can you get on board with us here? Jeez Louise, you can't handle it. The pressure.
That alphabet, we don't know.
Does he have the phone in his hand?
Yes, he does.
Good.
So you'll tell us if anything needs to be said, right? Okay, thank you. Anyway, so here we are just slogging away on the American Book of the Dead and trying to find our way to these chambers. And we made our way all the way from Chamber Knot to
my favorite.
And now I think we're somewhere here.
26, 27,
28,
is that right?
24, I think.
Oh, 24, 25, 26?
We are on
chamber
25. Oh, right. 25. And we're actually going to take as a fistful 5, 25, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
Does that make sense over there, lady, miss in the back? She's nodding her head.
Good. We have approval.
We have approval from the peanut gallery. We'll continue anyway. So, one of the things that we notice as we're going through the American Book of the Dead, and I'm going to keep putting it in context, Pat, because we have to recall the work is a day-by-day, moment-by-moment thing. Is that right, Silverdale?
Absolutely.
Every day, every moment, it's we drive it in. And what we're doing in this particular one-hour session, which is only once per week, mm-hmm. 1 hour once per week, is we are endeavoring to create the bridge between our everyday lives and what we're reading in this book of the voyage of going through this magnetic confluence called, you know, the Bardos. And so we're taking a look at that. So when I read this stuff, I'm reading it in two different ways. I don't know if Star Ananda is she still doing the practitioner's class? She was doing a practitioner's class. She has been doing this for years now, you know. She took over and she's been teaching people all over the place, and that's a noble and difficult task. And what we're doing here is we're saying, okay, we're practitioners too. We know how to read, but we're going to be reading to each other and for ourselves. Now, many of you have the opportunity, you're in a group here with other individuals, and these individuals are quite unique. They are unique because these are individuals that have devoted a great part of their life to focusing on their life as a
voyager.
They are Bardo, and they understand that they are voyagers now and today, and they're vibrant in that work. So what opportunity you have, you say, oh, yeah, well, I just show up on Wednesday. That's pretty cool. That's good. That's excellent. But there's another opportunity you have, which is to contact each other. We can contact each other throughout the week. And this concept of reading together is very dynamic. If you look at these particular chambers that we're looking at this week, it's going to knock your socks off. And if you take the opportunity to read to one another, this is the ultimate roller coaster ride, okay?
Yes, that's a very good one.
I think that's a good way to put this particular one. And we're gonna rush through it like we're on a roller coaster too. And
but before we do,
and here's Pat's gonna help
we're going to stand as much as we are able from the point of view of the introductions to the macro dimensions. I'm reading from page 38. I'm just giving us a reminder because, for me, the reference point of all of the readings after this chapter, which I just finished reading live on the Patty Show 2 days ago, this paragraph states the real problem of primate existence is to train not the mind, but the essential self, the Voyager, whose presence and attention survive after all ordinary forms and manifestations of consciousness have fragmented into their five basic and, to the primate mind, totally unrecognizable components. This is roughly equivalent to a cowboy who has never been exposed to anything but duck art and black velvet bar paintings of nude Mexican women suddenly coming face to face with a signed original Picasso at his most cubist. Now we're ready for 25-26.
So, we are voyagers. And we are, happen to be blessed with the fact that we have been, that this concept has been introduced to us while we are still in manifestation in the world, in our body. There's a reason why that's happened. And we carry that responsibility forward, not only for ourselves, because you start to scratch the surface here and then this for myself part starts to go away pretty quickly. But it doesn't matter. You can have all the ego you want, because you will. I mean, it's going to chase you forever. But you keep going, and you start to see that it's for all beings everywhere. All sentient beings have a shot at it. And when one sentient being makes a little progress, we are doing great service to all of humanity. All right. So let's see if we can get ourselves through these three chambers here, and there's a reason I pulled them together. And let's see where we can go. You want to open up, Pat, on that and just maybe read a couple of paragraphs?
Yes. 25th chamber, third stage of the voyage through the macro dimensions of the labyrinth. At this point, I'm likely to feel that I'm about to be the victim of some kind of attack. Perhaps hunters, or a killer who's after me, or a coven of evil witches trying to destroy me with electrical spells, or federal and other espionage agents closing in on me.
So let me underline a couple of things that you're saying there, okay?
Please.
It starts at the beginning. It says, I feel like.
Exactly.
All right?
Exactly.
Once we start reading that descriptive, our imagination starts, we start thinking about that animal or the hunter or the witch's coven. It's the feeling that the author is trying to get us to focus on at this point. There's a sensation, and if we are able to understand that sensation, that can be a trigger for us.
It's a perfect setup. The perfect setup.
Well put. Okay?
Or the boogeyman waiting behind some door or in a back corner to gobble me up. But the fact is that it's my own show. No one is trying to do anything to me. I'm being driven and haunted by my own thought forms and paranoia.
Let me ask you a question, Harry. You were here in Grass Valley, California a few days ago, is that right?
Yes.
And you came on Friday with the intention of staying at least a week or so, right?
That is correct.
And then what happened?
Forest fires seem to have interfered with my plans.
And what'd you do?
I adjusted and went to a different locale where I could continue to do this work.
Breathe.
He
couldn't breathe. He and Valerie, they were suffering from the smoke, and it was intense. Those of us that live here, our lungs are already harmed enough that we can handle it a little bit. It's still real bad, but we were staying inside anyway. But the point of it is that, so what did you just read, Pat? What was that last sentence again?
It says...
The last phrase.
Sorry. Slip there. It says, I'm being driven and haunted by my own thought forms and paranoia.
But the fact is that it's my own show. Okay?
Absolutely.
The fact is that it's my own show. Do we ever believe that?
Rarely.
Pardon?
I say rarely, do we? We usually blame other things.
I mean, most of the time we really don't, do we?
Mm-mm.
I mean, really, it's just people around us doing stuff. And, you know, it's the economy is really bad. And I mean, I listen to some of these old speeches by Ted Kennedy 30 years ago, and he goes, the economy's really bad right now, and da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like exactly the same words, precisely the same.
The script hasn't changed at
all. The script doesn't change. The interface of the Voyager to the script is where there's a possibility of change.
Yes, there's the option inherent in every moment to insert a change in your POV.
Okay, so we have the opportunity to change our point of view, but it takes work to do that. George, are you starting to change your point of view a little bit with regard to your relationship to the vibratory sensation that you work with?
Yes, I'm trying to recall what you might be referring to from our conversation. But listen, certainly over the past couple of months for me, the strengthening of my inner vibratory sensation, which I think is the manifestation of the essential self, you know, we sense something internal to ourselves. And with that, functionality just begins to automatically unfold as a byproduct of that strengthening.
And you know, you begin to know, just ever so slightly, you begin to know that you're an essential self, not a lump of flesh walking through the planet.
Well, that's right, because, you know, Virgif uses these words, center of gravity, because the center
right.
of gravity of my experiences has shifted from the speed of a historical personality trying to process all sensory impressions within fixed, you know, frameworks of understanding, to shifting that center of gravity to the essential self, in which case we discover that the physical body, the historical personality, has a tendency to pacify itself, and then the essential self begins to function as a relatively independent aspect of ourselves. You know, this is where my work is what my work is showing me.
So if you're as sacrilegious as I am, I've underlined that sentence in my book. It says here, but the fact is it's my own show.
That's right.
I underlined it in some places. I have arrows pointing to it.
And exclamation marks.
if I'm still convinced that this is other determined, and that I'm the victim of a bad case of pantheism, the gods are doing it to me, then I'm now going to perform one of the dumber actions of the voids, and not without some pride. I love that one. Not only are you going to do something dumb, but you're going to be proud of it.
Yeah, and the fact is that if I'm still convinced, like I am convinced and I'm still convinced, and please don't try and change me about this, you know? It's like, it's almost a stubborn attitude.
It is a stubborn attitude. What is it that this Voyager is stubborn about?
Whatever it is that he thinks that he is.
Of holding on to the historical personality,
exactly.
And I am a machine, and you know what? And then he goes, then he attempts to, he's going to about to prove it, all right? He's going to say, now I recall and recount all the things that I consider good that I've done.
Mm.
Cool. And then all the things I consider bad that I've done. And compare them to the benefit of the beloved who is now accommodating my desires by appearing and acting as a judge. At this point in the Tibetans, this is where you meet Yama. This is a bad dude.
Yeah.
I mean, this creep, I mean, he comes with his team of people to help.
Yeah.
And lays out, the way they say, they lay out little white stones that are your good things you've done good. And then he lays out all the black stones of the things you didn't do so good. And these are not necessarily the overt acts, but it's your hidden motives that are related to it too. It's the dark motive that you had.
It's your intent.
It's the intent that you had, and he brings those forth and says, here's the story. I think Yami is just an accountant, okay?
Yeah,
I'm
going to
just raise my hand here.
That description there. It's just an accounting situation.
This is an accounting matter here. It's the balance sheet has come forth, and we're going to see is it balanced. And then Yami says, you know what? And then you say at this point.
I'm sure that I can probably justify everything.
Here's the one that I like. Now you start to justify all your actions.
Yeah, I can justify everything.
You know, it wouldn't have been like this except for my mother.
It's the economy?
My mother, let me tell you about my mother. and this is what, this is women.
Mm.
90%, they don't talk about they say, I got all my wisdom from my grandmother. Because my mother was such a zero, and then of course for men, it's the battle with their father on the field of survival, and of course, you know, these young boys lose until something else happens.
Hard done by,
and it's this battle that goes on. It says, see, that's why I did the things like that.
Of course, it's totally understandable. It's not your fault. You didn't ever have a chance.
How are we doing on the chat
you
over
suffered.
There? And Yama says, just, and I know this is impossible, but this god of death is sitting there listening to you, and I put in the term calmly, but he's not sitting calmly, I guarantee you. He is not. Because then at that moment, it doesn't matter. It's just the mirror of karma is brought forth and says, this is the facts, Jack. That's all. That's the facts. This is what it was. You can justify all you want, but you were involved in it. There's an interesting, I think I brought this up before, in Purgatorio in the Divine Comedy by Dante. And there's this story of these three sisters who were, they basically wanted to go into the nunnery, but their father nevertheless married them off.
Exactly.
They were married off, yeah. And they became, then they were, you know, in secular life, they got married, they had children, so all like that. And they had to go through purgatory And you know why? Because they didn't fight hard enough to follow the path that they wanted to fight. They didn't fight hard enough. They were pure of heart, but they didn't put enough into it. And Dante gets rapped on the knuckles a little bit later, too. So did you fight hard enough for the path that has been given you and laid at your feet? That's part of it, too. You could be all this, all goody-two-shoes, and yeah, you never do anything wrong, but did you fight hard enough to do the work that's before you? And I think that some of you look in your heart at night and go, you know what? Maybe I didn't. And so it's just this mirror of karma. It's not a matter of judgment at that point. It's not a matter of justifying it or all of this stuff. It's just literally...
feeling very intense and serious while I'm justifying all these actions, I may feel that these are my own actions which I initiated, unless I can recall the mechanical nature of the world, and that through constant exposure to its distractions, I have become convinced that I'm an ego with a will of my own, with the ability to alter action in the world and the ability to do something other than what's happening. I think the switcheroo in this particular paragraph is it's a point in the voyage where the upside down nature of what you have assumed to be the reality of the situation is thrown on you. Again, this is a reverse mirror image, but it's also upside down, because what I now recall and recount, all the things that I consider good that I've done, that's actually my own inclination to make the scene something that I'm familiar with, to actually replace what is actually there with something I'm making up. I recall and recount all the things I consider to be good that I've done. And the last sentence says, I've become convinced that I have the ability to do something other than what's happening. Again, complete lack of acknowledgement of the situation as it truly is. It's a very intriguing paragraph. Deep, deep, deep. Good. Comments, yes.
Would you please
put the phone in your hand and read them?
I have a question for Pat.
Yeah, go ahead, Harry.
Yes, I'm ready.
What she just read, I think, is a very powerful couple of lines. So it would seem to imply that all of this creation, all of the experience that we are and have experienced, has already happened, and we're just taking our time so we don't have to experience it all at once. But there's really nothing new. The outcome has been foreordained from the start.
Well,
but when we're in our mechanicality, we fall under the delusion that we're actually making these things happen.
Let's
give up that.
So we read the next paragraph, okay?
Okay.
It's a good note. You are noting exactly what we need to be paying attention to, and there's something that we're going to address in a moment, if you can.
Okay. Yes.
Bear with.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, so Path World. As echoed David's comment, my mother and men and economy and you and I didn't have a chance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then and Drew, it sounds like the comment is, wow, historical self, Yama, justify intent. Wow. Thanks.
Yeah. So, you're underlining. Druin is underlining that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Silverdale, I am an involuntary victim of life, but I wish to be a conscious and determinate being. And then Gnostic Man, how does the essential self insert itself into life? Is it just an awareness within the stream of life?
You're doing that now. You're inserting yourself into life now by making the essential self the fundamental basis from which you act. And you do that by effort after effort after effort of staying in the essential self and acknowledging that you're part of the essential self. Then it starts to gain weight.
It becomes your primary cause, your primary focus, and your primary reminder of what every moment is occurring is not what your interest is. It's not your passion. It's not your concern. What's going on? Your passion, your concern, and your attention is focused on the source of attention, the essential self.
Gnostic Man, you have a good idea what it feels like to be in the essential self. The essential self requires that you will it to be part of your life. It doesn't automatically do it. That's what the mechanicality is. It's automatic. It's a free ride. It's your effort that brings the essential self into your day-to-day activity, and you enliven it. And at that moment, it's just everything is alive at that time. It's because you're literally at that moment at a moment of creation. And creation is unfolding about you at that moment. So you could be doing anything. How are we doing over there? Is that it? Are we up to? Okay. So then, now here's an interesting thing. So you're caught in this stuff, right?
Yes.
You're caught in this stuff. Yama's sitting there. He's listening to you, bored, you know, and he knows what's going to happen next. But then, listen to what the author says, and this is not unusual, and it's an if-then statement. This is the second part of the next paragraph, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I know that if I am too egotistical to admit cleanly and clearly that I'm afraid and don't know what's going on, if I am too egotistical to admit that, I will be compelled to go through the next little drama.
Yep.
That's an if-then statement in logic. If I'm caught up in my ego and I can't admit that I'm
in
this chain of karma.
I'm lost.
Pardon?
I'm lost. What page are we on?
147.
Okay.
130 of the 30th edition.
Thank you.
25th chamber.
25th chamber, Susan.
And now I'm found.
Yes, indeed, you are. So
now that's a perfect example. That is a perfect example of what the sentence just said. The sentence said, if I'm too egotistical to admit that I don't know what's going on, I'll be compelled. But if I do ask, what's going on? I'm lost. I'm not on the right paragraph. Where are we? That gives the opportunity for something to be different, for there to be an extended reality, not the automatic one that you've been continuing through the bardos. That was a lovely example. Did you guys set that up?
Yeah.
No, but I really was. I really was sitting here lost, and I'm like, "Well, do I admit that I'm lost? How could I admit that I'm lost after all this time?"
Yes.
But if I don't ask, then I'm going to still be lost.
Yeah.
Precisely.
And
but,
you know what? don't ask, then no one else is going to have the opportunity to know where we are and to share that with you, because you cannot disclose things like, well, where are we, unless someone needs to know. You can't
right.
give answers to questions that do not get asked.
I kept waiting and hoping.
I'm really
yeah.
appreciative that you asked.
So, two different techniques, waiting and hoping or asking.
Mm-hmm.
Which one was more effective?
Well, asking and realizing that even if I look like a total jerk, I at least will have the information.
And by the way, I'd like to point out that a very important ingredient in what just happened is that Susan has an urgency about things that the rest of us don't have, with the urgency being with the awareness of her impending passing. It's important to take care of things sooner rather than later and not just continue to wallow in confusion.
And let me just add to that, please, if I may. Is that Silverdale?
Yep.
Silverdale. The rest of us apparently don't have an urgency. That's not to say that the urgency is not there. We're just
sure.
not necessarily aware of it, and we also are borrowing her urgency. So it's twice as important that she was willing to share with us that she was lost, because all of us get the benefit from that.
For sure.
Once again, thank you.
And by the way, I might also add that all of us actually feel the urgency of our own impending death, certainly more so than people in the ordinary world. And it's what prompts us to pursue this effort of really trying to wake
That's
up
right.
and stop exhibiting confusion.
Good point.
So then what happens is, since most of us have the habit of justifying our life, I mean,
yeah.
you know, when you're in front of the judge,
yeah.
you just start saying, really wasn't my fault,
no,
dude.
I didn't do it.
Buddy, you know.
It wasn't me.
And you lay out the reasons. Well, then the next part of the drama starts to unfold. And everybody nods their head, accepts the fact that they heard what you have to say, and they're just happy to hear what you had to say. And then something happens. And you continue, as we go to the next paragraph, you continue to protest. I love that one. So here you are in the final judicial hearing, and the first thing you do is you protest. As it, you know, your ego is so huge that you protest that it's wrong what's been done to you. And you continue in that regard. And then the beloved unfolds and says, oh, let's check this out, and starts to form in the Lord of Death, or the Monkey Man, and the crazy clown. That's why clowns look so horrible. You know, when you look at them, kids get frightened by clowns. We look into the mirror or the fire, however I see the cosmic computer, and it points out that I need some punishment, which I've known all along. At this point, I'm going to get exactly what I expected. That's important. If at this point I realize this is just my expectation and that my karmic tendencies are bringing all this about, then I could be spontaneously liberated right here and now. Throughout, there's the chance for that, throughout, to be liberated, but it is a hurdle to get there. But guess what? We have a panic. We have a practice time right now to practice against those panics. And you have to look in your life and you see what is it you're holding on to that creates the finiteness of your life rather than the infinite of it.
Well, this is point that I'm going to speak to in the personal at this point here. The conversation the other day was about the collection of habits that have accumulated, or however they go, that propel this particular organism, the one that I'm operating out of at the moment, to be helpful. I have the nomenclature of being a caregiver, and, you know, if somebody needs some assistance on a deathbed or in a sick room or, you know, in a birthing chamber, well, you'll find me there. That's where I usually am. And my beloved partner posed to me the other day, have you always been like that? And I had to ponder and say, it looks to me like the collection of the habits, also in my opinion known as destiny, have that as a strong component. And it feels to me, this is where I'm going to relate to what we're saying here,
right.
It feels to me like that is my nature. It's part of my nature. It's actually something that is embedded in the character that I'm wearing here. And I thought, wow, there's a picture of my karmic traits as they are being played out at the moment. In fact, quite a lot of the moments. So what this says, what this says is right here, is if at this point I realize that this is just my expectation and that my karmic tendencies are bringing all this about. So I pondered that. I carried that around with me for the rest of at least that day, I'll tell you, because, geez,
yeah,
you get a good look at something when you take it on like that. So I just wanted to share that because
it's huge.
It fits right in there.
This class is a practicum. This is not a lecture series. Okay.
I'm so glad you
reminded
me of that.
Because you, see, that's what I mean. So Pat has been working at this for a very, very long time. She drove that, she took that opportunity a few days ago, and she held it before her eyes all day, the karmic tendency. And this is, and how are you doing that? How are you doing that in your own existence right now? I don't mean the general you, but I mean specifically you.
Yes.
And you have a comment that you wanted to share, right?
Yes, there is a comment.
Dan's going to go ahead and read it.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Okay, so first of all, Gnostic Man says, humility as a virtue is this recognition that we don't know where we are.
Thank you.
Yes.
And then Yuhin says, but how can one ask a random question between a sequence of a reading which has reached the 26th chamber? Can it be that sometimes one waits till they get in the flow and ask immediate queries about what is happening?
Yes.
Or any random question can be inserted in between, which can break the flow of readings and followers who were already there.
Don't forget, these are, this Voyager doesn't have the book in their hand.
No.
The book, the Voyager isn't sitting there studying, having, you know, two or three books around them, and they just say, oh yeah, let's see here. What does this mean? The Voyager is going through a electrical condition. It's a arc of environment that they're going to. The reader is reading this. If the Voyager has instilled habits like Pat did, when she got that question, that became a, she understood that to take that on as a, to work with that. If the Voyager has instilled the habits of internal questioning, they can ask this question.
they can say, oh, wait a minute, this event is occurring. This is my own karmic wind right now.
I don't understand what you what you just read.
Help us again.
Can you
read it again?
Read it again for us, please.
Okay. But how can one ask a random question between a sequence of a reading which has reached the 26th chamber? Can it be that sometimes one waits till they get in the flow and ask immediate queries about what is happening?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you fine. Somehow we got accidentally hung up on.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, we have to be, it's probably have to be careful.
Yeah.
Somehow we hung up.
So the second half of the question that I'm answering now, which Dan is going to tell us again, just speak it to me, Dan, and I'll put, don't fool with the phone thing since we had trouble. Just speak it to me and I'll repeat it into the microphone. Okay, or any random question can be inserted in between, which can break the flow for the readers who are already there. No, it can't break the flow of the reading because the reading in and of itself has a flow which is based on the receptivity of the reading. It is not based on the deliverance of this question or that question. So this is just the mechanicality of understanding how the space of the macro dimensions works and what it is that you're actually delivering. So in this case, we're speaking of how do I, as a being, ask, where am I?
The reader is not posing different questions. The reader is reading what is in this particular, what's written in this particular book. The voyager might ask a question in the form that the question arises within the voyager. So you're right, Pat. It's just the understanding of the mechanics of how this works and how where that voyager is in the macro, the arc of the macro dimensions at this moment. The voyager is caught in the element of looking in the karmic mirror at this point.
Exactly.
And several times during this particular chamber, there's a little door opens and it says, oh, did you realize that this is your own stuff?
Yeah.
Then one thing happens, and then it says, and if you didn't, this other thing happens. But once you're in that place and you've been through Terminus, you don't have a lot of practice time. Like, you already got on the roller coaster, and so you're riding through it. The practice time comes now, today. This is our karmic unfolding right now.
At this point, I'm going to get exactly what I expected. This is the clue about how the macro dimensions reflects exactly and specifically to you what it is that you have constructed out of it. It's just, it's beautiful. It's so clean. At this point,
does this make sense?
I'm going to get exactly what I expected.
Spectacular. This is like remarkable information. Do we understand this?
Well, it can be anyone. I mean, anyone.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that sees this?
Well, I have a comment.
Okay.
Yes.
I had been sitting here, and I granted I'm not feeling very good, but that's to be used as an excuse. But I was sitting here, and I kept going, and I kept waiting for a clue. Or kept waiting for the chamber to end and go to the next chamber of which you would then announce. And there was nothing to give me a clue. And
okay.
I suppose I could have asked on the log to preserve the experience of others and not to interrupt. I don't know, it just came so naturally that what page are we on, and you say 27, and then you keep reading. So first off, I certainly didn't do it in a spirit of interrupting. It just felt natural that, oh my God, here I am all this time. And I'm
not
still, I just can't find where we are.
Yes.
And it became important enough that I just, either I risked asking and feeling bad.
Risked asking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was a risk. I say a lot of stuff.
It is, in fact, a risk.
Absolutely.
Look at it from our point of view here, person on the phone. We don't know that you're even out there, okay? We're just doing this reading, and then we get response back.
Right.
Right?
Well, right.
And it's in that communication back and forth that there can be response back and forth. If there is no risk taking on the part of the askers, it is hard for us to give, to enter into that communication. We'll continue, but we got a great gift because somebody took a risk, right?
And also, you can look at it as, look how much time this has taken.
And what is that?
Yeah.
What is that commodity that we're actually spending at the moment? If you take a look at it, it's not the time.
Correct.
The time actually has nothing to do with our interconnectedness or the of our posing these questions to each other.
Right, otherwise this slow reading thing would never work.
Yes, and the slow reading actually, you know, it's again, let me reiterate where I started tonight. It's not training the mind. It's not the mind that voyages through the macro dimensions. It's the essential self. That's not a mental activity. It's not speed. It's not slower, faster time or any of that. It is only the qualities that an essential self has, which, you know, we'll visit in relation to this at a different point. But I'm so grateful that you will offer this because, you know, David and I will continue to traverse through the chambers, the words on the page here with you. But that doesn't take us where we really want to go, which is how does it apply? What is it you can actually do with what this has to give? How can you use it?
And by taking this risk, you called it a risk.
Yeah.
By taking the risk, that's one deposit in that habit form that particular voyager has forever.
Nice.
Well, and Juhan is saying, I felt the same as the lady who spoke, the exact same risk.
Yeah.
For saying his or her opinion.
Yes.
And it's true, there's that moments where you're tripping around inside. Should I ask for a thing? What would they think? How could I ask you at this point? And this whole world of going around happens. And in those moments, if I hadn't have asked, I would have not been as conscious as if I had asked.
If you hadn't asked, then you would have put a deposit in a different form of habit.
Right. And it would have just been another time that I
didn't do
what I needed to do to learn something.
Yeah, your risk taking also gets stronger by risk taking.
Right.
Even if you don't have answers from the questions that you're risking yourself to ask, that's actually not the point, you know. The risk taking itself is the muscle that needs strengthening. And also, the other thing you alluded to there about being sensitive to, you know, is it the right time? Is it going to interrupt? Does it take it away from how we're going? And all of that. All of that being, you know, recognizing consideration of others and how we're working together. That's all valid.
Yep.
Not to say any of that has been invalidated. On the other hand, as you said, it just came to you naturally to say it. And that is a lot to be said about the mood or the modality of your interaction with the chamber. It speaks in a certain way. The chamber itself dictates the manner in which you operate in that chamber. So I believe that we have done very well in our responses with each other, and this is another indication of it. We can't touch on some of these things to this degree unless the doorway gets opened by somebody taking a risk to ask something that's not necessarily in, you know, what we said we were going to work with. Okay, I'll shut up.
And I think Drew is taking the same thing. You know, he's taking the risks as he is in a delicate situation that he's working in.
Definitely.
Too. So I'm just, this is how inner habits get created. Pat is, she used a great phrase, while we're in this chamber, because we are in this chamber together right now. How do we operate in this chamber? Some of us are in the chamber and some of us aren't in the chamber. Some of us move out of the chamber in different ways. And so, and some are here with full attention and necessity. And that's a different factor. I had a reason to blend these three chambers together, but I'm very, very slow at what I'm doing here. And I can't let Yama off the hook, and because we need to talk a little bit about the last paragraph of this chamber, but we're running out of time. We're going to go ahead and let the time run out, but we're going to come back and honor his role, too.
Yes.
This is, I mean, as a member of the great labyrinth, the monkey man or Yama or whatever you're going to call him, has a role to play and comes in and plays that role, and that particular post is not always a pleasant one to play, but it must be played by someone. Some entity does that effort.
And because it was the first thought that occurred to me when we started this chamber tonight, if anyone so chooses, and I believe you can do it through an index search, if you look for all references to the beloved in the Book of the Dead and chart them, you will get the pantheon of the jealous gods, and you will also get the descriptors of the beneficence. And I can't think of the correct word that goes with that. What is that word? You know what I mean.
Benevolent.
Friendly guides,
responsive.
But anyway, if you do that little search, just in this one there is five.
Right.
You know, so you get a quality, an aspect of what is the beloved, what is my relationship to the beloved. The beloved in this chamber does what, acts in what relationship to me, as what function. That, as a query, and not to do a research paper, but as a query, clues you in to some of the realities of the voyage experience.
We'll continue our pursuit of the karmic mirror next week.
Oh, thank goodness.
Quickly.
Thank you.
Good.
Yes, I can. at this point, I'm going to get exactly what I expected. My point of view, my expectations, how it is I think it all is, at this point, I'm going to get exactly what I expected, because that is how it is created. So my point is, do you get that that is how it works, that the macro dimensions of the labyrinth portray exactly what you expect them to portray in every way, in every way? Nothing is left out. It is exactly what you expect. Can't be any different. You're the Voyager.
And we can construct new expectations if we do our work like we're doing tonight. Is that it? Dan, how are we doing? Yeah. And you ask for help, yeah. I think we're there. Yeah? We'll see you next week, Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Good night.